Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Ancient Future Faith on KFIA Radio. My name is Chris Alford, and I'm the host of the program and also the lucky guy who gets to pastor Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community right here in Sacramento. By the way, if you're interested in learning more about ancient future faith, what in the world that means, then I'd love for you to pop over to our website. It's epiclesis.org. That's epiclesis.org. And learn more about ancient future Christian faith, or this radio program, or the church, Epiclesis. Each Saturday on KFIA, we attempt to bring you interesting guests who help me unpack this very big subject, which is what in the world is ancient future Christian faith? And today I have a very special guest for you. His name is Dr. Dwayne Arnold. He lives in Indianapolis, Indiana, and he was doing ancient future faith before it was cool. Dwayne, welcome to the program. I'm so glad to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's just a real joy to be with you.
Dwayne and I were talking before we began recording the interview, and to just hear him sketch out the breadth of his career and both academics and music and seriously doing ancient future things even before it was on anybody's radar, particularly the evangelical church, is breathtaking. Dwayne, what haven't you done in your career?
Well, you know, I think within most church communities these days, you have to be a bit of a jack of all trades.
Yes.
But I think the one single thing that has been a constant in my life has been a love of the early church and of church history.
Yeah. I was reading in your bio that you have authored, I think, 9 books and numerous articles for scholarly journals, and you have done a lot of work in church history, and one in particular is called Prayers of the Martyrs. This is a monograph that has been translated, I think your material says, into 9 different languages. Tell us a little bit about that project and how it came to be, and maybe a little bit about what you learned along the way.
Well, it really started as an exercise. I had finished up my PhD work. I was serving as a precentor at the Episcopal Cathedral in Detroit, Michigan, and I was chaplain at Wayne State. And I suddenly realized that the languages that I had learned to do my academic work were slipping. My Greek, Coptic, and Syriac, and things of this sort. And I thought, well, what should I do about this? And I thought, well, I'm going to start translating some things out of the early church fathers, those people who have influenced me so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I started translating them. And in the course of time, I had this file full of prayers that I had translated, specifically prayers of those who had died for their faith. Many times these were actually their very last words that were recorded.
Wow.
And I was talking one day to my editor at HarperCollins, Zondervan at that time, Bob Hudson, and he said, well, what have you been doing, Dwayne? And I said, well, I've just been doing this translation exercise. And he said, well, why don't you send them to me? And I did, and he called me and said, we'd like to publish it as a book.
Wonderful.
And so I sort of tidied them up, did small biographies of each of the people whose prayer I had translated, and then called my dear friend in New York, Madeline Langle, whom some of your listeners may know of.
Well, of course, yes.
And asked her if she'd be willing to do the foreword to the book, and she said, oh, absolutely. And so she did the foreword, and we sent everything off to the publisher, and it went out. Ended up through the course of time selling about 60,000 copies, and it's been translated into about 9 languages. It's in Portuguese, it's in Korean, it's in Chinese. So it's been a gratifying experience.
Dwayne, how would someone get a hold? Is it even possible for the general public to get a hold of that monograph any longer?
It is out of print, but here within the next 6 months, we actually hope to have it as a download on our website, and we have pretty well decided that we're going to give it away for free.
Wow, you're kidding.
Yeah, we think it's a good thing to do.
Wow, tell us that website so folks can write that down.
It is themartyrsproject.com.
Marvelous. Okay, so the title is Prayers of the Martyrs, and Duane's going to have that up on their website shortly. You mentioned earlier that you had done a PhD. That was the one in church history in Durham in the United Kingdom. Is that correct?
Yeah, my work was on a 4th century saint who was a very important man, Athanasius of Alexandria.
Oh, yes.
Who kept himself through his life in 5 exiles, adhering strictly to the full deity of Christ. That is, that Christ was truly God.
As I understand it, and I didn't remember that it was 5 exiles, but I was getting ready to say, wasn't he exiled about 6 times? And then, isn't he the character who used to run along beside the horse of the emperor and have theological debates with him? That's at least one of the stories I think I remember reading about Athanasius.
Absolutely. He's a bit of a controversial figure in that he was strongly motivated, but many of his works are available in very good translations, and I'd encourage your listeners to look at them. One especially is called On the Incarnation.
Oh, yeah. That's perhaps the most important, wouldn't you say?
Yes. And the best version of it is one that has a preface by C.S. Lewis.
Oh, I did not realize that.
And C.S. Lewis made one of his most telling comments that has to do with our mutual attraction to ancient future faith, which is the worst prejudice is a prejudice against the past.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And it's a prejudice against old books, as though we can only deal with what's new.
Right.
With, you know, something we've discovered. And to realize that there's a whole depth of knowledge that's out there that's gone before us.
And particularly when we're talking about Athanasius, that's a beautiful point to raise with him. Why should evangelicals care about Athanasius? Well, for one thing, he was living in a world not so dissimilar to our own. He was standing firm for the deity of Christ. And here's Athanasius, as I understand it, Duane, you correct me if I'm wrong, who at the end of his life died when it looked like some of these heresies might be winning the day. I think when he died, there was a Roman emperor who was Arian who had ascended to power, and he probably died feeling pretty discouraged. And yet we can look at his words and we can look at his work and apply it very beautifully to the world we see around us today.
Absolutely. You know, it's a similar situation to that of St. Augustine, the bishop of Hippo. He dies as the Goths and the Vandals could be heard outside besieging the city.
Right.
And yet this is the man who writes The City of God.
Yeah, right.
It's not always the circumstances that we find ourselves in that are the most important.
Oh, that's beautifully
said. It's what the belief system is that we carry with us.
Folks, you're listening to an interview with Dr. Duane Arnold. He's a member of the Ancient Future Faith Network, and he has been doing ancient future faith things for a very long time. His academic record is astonishing. He's also a wonderful musician and producer, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. But Duane, before we turn to that conversation, I wanted to at least touch on some of the neat things that you were talking with me about earlier. You were doing ancient future faith before it was on any evangelicals' radar. And then you also bumped into Bob Weber, our mutual friend and mentor, along the way. Can you tell us a little bit about what you were doing and where you were doing it with ancient future things even back many years ago?
Well, we had a small fellowship community in northwestern Ohio, and we had our regular Bible studies and our regular worship service, and I had become interested in reading the church fathers and those church writers who wrote, and especially in the first 6 centuries. And as I was reading them, I started to have this realization that, and this may sound terribly innocent, that I wasn't the first one who'd sort of walked this path, that there were hundreds of years of people who had done this. And I wanted to know what they believed, and more than just what they believed, how they worshipped, what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ran across this document called the Didache, which is the teachings, and it really outlines a lot of what took place in the early church just in the couple generations following the death of Christ. And other members of our fellowship started reading it, and we sort of said, well, I guess this is what we're supposed to be doing.
Huh.
And so we then decided to have a weekly Eucharist, like the early church did, that is Holy Communion, where we eat around a table with bread and wine once a week. And then we started to look at, well, how do we worship? What do we sing? And right at about that time, a good friend of mine, John Michael Talbot, had brought out an album called The Lord's Supper, and shortly after that, some psalms called Come to the Quiet.
Yes.
Well, our musicians in our fellowship adapted those for congregational use. And so within the period of about a year, we didn't really know it at the time, but we were doing a regular liturgy with a Eucharist. And just about that time, I came across Bob Weber's book, Common Roots. And I read it, and I can remember the day I finished reading it, and I thought, well, this guy's at Wheaton, but he's written a book like that. I'm going to call him up on the phone. And I called his office, and he answered. And that started a friendship and a relationship that went on for some years.
Yeah.
And he gave us advice and encouragement. He was actually rather amazed that somebody was actually doing this or had started to do it just out of reading the Fathers.
By the way, any of those early liturgies or pieces of music that you guys cobbled together still available or around? I'd love to see those.
Actually, they're not, but you can get the best idea by listening to John Michael Talbot's The Lord's Supper.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know it.
Yeah, that's really the best one. But actually, some of the things that we did 30-some years ago, there are a couple pieces that we're actually recording for the next album that we're doing. So you will be able to hear them within about, 3 to 6 months.
Good, good. I should mention, one of the things we do at Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community here in Sacramento, is that we go back and do exactly that kind of thing. We take a look at texts from, say, Chrysostom or Athanasius or Melito, some of these marvelous writers in the first few centuries of the church, and set them to completely new contemporaneous musical settings. And so if folks here in the Sacramento area want to kind of get a feel for what that sounds like, I'd love for them to come worship with us on Sunday mornings at 10:30. Folks, you're listening to an interview with Dr. Duane Arnold. He has had a remarkable academic career. He's earned, I think, something like 7 degrees and diplomas, including a PhD in church history from Durham in the United Kingdom. He has been a senior research assistant at Concordia Theological Seminary, a tutor at St. Chad's College in Durham, a lecturer in religious studies at the University of Detroit, a lecturer in church history at Ashland Theological Seminary. On and on the list goes. Included in that list, Duane, is that of a musician. And you've been involved with music from the earliest days of Christian contemporary music. You promoted numerous solid rock artists, organizing concerts, etc. Tell us a little bit about that, and then I'm really anxious for the listeners to hear about a project or two that you're working on these days.
Well, it was, of the time. And all of the people in our fellowship, loved music. It was coming right out of the Jesus movement. And really one of the seminal figures in all of this was Larry Norman. And Larry used to come and stay with us for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. We used to say it's because when he would come to be with us, we would have a wine rack filled up, not with wine, but with rolled up copies of Rolling Stone that he'd read. And through Larry, we started to know other people, and then, of course, the guys who formed the rock band Petra,
right.
Really the first Christian rock band, they were friends of ours from Fort Wayne. It was Bob Hartman in the early days, and Greg Hoag as lead guitarist, who I'm still in touch with, and John DeGroff and Bill Glover. And we hosted some of their very first concerts, And then through that, it was Randy Stonehill, and it was all the folk from Calvary Chapel and Maranatha Music. And we became sort of a place where people came to listen to the music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very interesting thing because we dedicated this album that we've done called Martyr's Prayers. We dedicated it to two people, and we thought this was really going to confuse everyone. We dedicated it to Robert Weber and Larry Norman.
Wow. And the name of that album again, Duane, was?
Martyr's Prayers.
Okay. By the way, people can get a hold of that, yes, somehow? Where can they go to listen to that?
They can get it. If they want downloads, they can go to iTunes, they can go to Amazon, or they can go to themartyrsproject.com, and there's a purchase point there that they can do.
So these days, Duane, you're working on a new album, as I understand it. Tell us a little bit about what that's about, and give us a little backstory, and when will it be available?
Well, we're working on an album right now, which is the Easter Vigil of St. John Chrysostom. John Chrysostom was one of the preeminent writers, and I would have to say liturgists, even though some aspects are disputed on that, from about the 5th and 6th century is when it really coalesced.
In Constantinople.
Yes, and his work on liturgy is still used this day as the standard worship pattern for the Orthodox Church, Byzantine Catholic Church. It has lasted through the centuries. And the Easter Vigil, of course, is for the service on Holy Saturday coming up to Easter Eve.
Right.
It's the service of waiting that takes place on Holy Saturday as we approach Easter Eve and then the celebration of Christ's resurrection from the dead.
We should mention that Chrysostom had a nickname. And it is for that nickname that we know about him, and he was called the Golden Mouthed because he could really turn a phrase, couldn't he, Duane?
Yes, he could. And the language is beautiful.
Oh, indeed.
To light the lamps in the sanctuary, joyful light of the holy glory of the immortal Father. What a wonderful, it's just a wonderful set of phrases that express so much in terms of worship and devotion.
I'm trying to commit his, or at least a portion of his Eucharistic liturgy, anaphora, the prayer at table, to memory, and I use that at Epiclesis, and there's this marvelous place where he talks about, though there attend upon your own person thousands of angels and myriads of archangels, cherubim, seraphim, soaring on their pinions, six-winged and many-eyed, yet you are still pleased to accept from us this act of worship. Who else could write something except the Golden Mouth, right?
I know. We've done one of the hymns, and the lyric goes, a beautiful angel, radiant with grace, smelling sweet of incense. I mean, they're just wonderful descriptive phrases.
And so you're using Chrysostom text, Chrysostom's writings, in the Easter Vigil and setting that to music. Is it one big long through composed piece, Duane, or is it a series of pieces on the album?
It's a series of pieces. We want to take people on a journey. We want to take people on a journey similar to the journey, Chris, that you and I have taken.
Ah.
And there's actually a narrative that I'm writing right now that's going to be with the packaging of this. And it's essentially about this guy who's had it with everything, been through the denominations, he's been through the coffee houses, he's been through the mega churches, and he's finally so disgusted with it all, he goes off into the mountains, and he's caught in a storm. And he seeks shelter from the storm, and he finds a broken-down little church where he thinks he hears bells.
Hmm.
And he walks into the church, and what he walks into is the Easter Vigil.
Wow.
And the music for this is pretty much acoustic bass. We like to say that it's St. John Chrysostom meets Poco and the Eagles.
Well, I was gonna ask you what kind of style. I hate focusing entirely on style, so I don't want to do that. But I do have to ask, how would you describe it? So it was a little bit Eagles, is that what you said?
Yeah, absolutely. And we did it this way very intentionally in that it's acoustic music that congregations can easily adapt if they wish to use it.
Oh, I see.
I think part of our work in ancient future faith is, for lack of a better term, it's a work of evangelism.
Hmm.
And our hope is that for all of these churches that are out there and they have a praise band or they have this or they have that or they have six different guys that can play guitar, that they might look at this and say, well, we're not sure about all of this ancient liturgy idea, but boy, we really like that song for worship.
Yeah, and the text is great.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that we might infiltrate. Maybe that's the best word to use.
Yeah, I like that as well. So the name of the album is going to be what?
We don't know.
Oh.
Naming it has been a real problem.
Okay, maybe it should be Golden Mouth, huh?
It's a possibility that that's one of the ones that has been put in the hopper.
Dwayne, one more time, give us that website so folks can keep up with the progress of the album.
That is themartyrsproject.com. And there they can find links to go to our Facebook account or our Twitter account if they wish. And it's a very exciting time right now. It's a very exciting creative time.
Mm. You know, the conversation has been wonderful, Dwayne. And I would just love to ask, this whole thing about ancient future Christian faith, it's not a fad. It's not a church growth movement. It's not a new technique. It's not something new at all. It's very ancient. And it seems to be capturing the imagination of Christians, evangelicals, across denominational spectrum. Why should people care, Dwayne, about this thing called ancient future Christian faith?
I think it's the hope for the future. If you look at the statistics, by the year 2050, you will have to look in a dictionary to find out what an Episcopalian is, because there will be none left. By the year 2055, the same with the Methodists, the same with the Presbyterians. Mainline denominations are going down quickly as they've tried to adapt to every new nuance of culture.
Yeah.
What I think we're offering in ancient future faith is to say, we're not the first ones that have been on this path.
Right.
Let's learn from those who have come before us in good times and in bad, and let's take some of their wisdom and take that wisdom and use it today for a meaningful life of worship for ourselves, but also as meaningful worship as it's reflected out to the world.
Yeah, well said. Folks, you've been listening to a wonderful interview with Dr. Dwayne Arnold. My goodness, what has he not done? He's a pastor, he's a priest, he is an academician, he's a wonderful musician and producer, and as I said earlier, he was doing ancient future faith before it was cool, before it was on anybody's radar. Dwayne, thank you so much for taking the time to share with us today on ancient future faith.
Thank you, Chris. It's been a real joy to be with you.
Folks, until we gather next time for another edition of Ancient Future Faith, I want you to be thinking about this. Really ponder it. The road to our evangelical future surely does run through our ancient Christian past. Until next time, the Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the evangelical church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church, and they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience ancient future faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113 or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Christmas is over, right? So what happens next? Well, one ancient future thing about our celebration is that Christmas doesn't end with a whimper or roll quietly to a stop. It ends with a big bang called Epiphany, the wonderful season that celebrates the revelation of Jesus Christ. Join us for worship during Epiphany, won't you? And by the way, our small groups are getting ready to launch a study of C.S. Lewis's classic Mere Christianity, and I'd love for you to be a part. As always, get more details on the web at epiclesis.org. That's epiclesis.org. The Lord be with you, and see you next time for another edition of Ancient Future Faith.